connected. All right, announcements. Does anybody have an announcement? No. All right, I thought I saw a letter from somebody. Yeah. Okay, that's true. All right, so there's no announcements, and there's a few written communications. One is from former PWAB member Jenny Brantley, retiring from the board and just letting us know. And so we wish her all the best. And the next we had a letter from the bike committee, and I'm trying to find it. Where is it?
On the back.
Oh, yeah, of course. All right. And this is a letter saying that the Morro Bay Citizens Bike Committee supports a recommendation to County Parks that the multi-use trail between Morro Bay and Cayugas be built on the western side of Highway 1 on the ocean side. And as a biker with my kids around Morro Bay, I can wholeheartedly agree with that. So please note that this is into the record. Next, we had an email correspondence from John Zwemer, a former Public Works Advisory Board member, commenting about various streets and pothole issues around the city. And we will be talking about that later and when we talk about future agenda items. Are there any other written communications or anything anybody would like to say? No. All right, moving on. Public comments, presentations. I don't think we have any public comments. Dylan, are you going to wait till your presentation later?
Yeah, I'll do that as part of the staff report.
All right, no problem. Moving on to...
Excuse me. One moment.
Oh, we do have a public comment. Mr. Smuckler.
Thank you. I just wanted to introduce myself to the board. I am Noah Smuckler. I am our city council representative to the Public Works Advisory Board. So if you do have any questions, correspondence that you would like to be forwarded to the council at any time, feel free to contact me and I can relay the message to the council, or you could come yourself. We have extended an invitation to the board to, at some point, if you feel there is an issue that's important to you, to come to a city council meeting and relay a message directly to the council. But other than that, I will be attending your meetings and I'm open to any comments that you may have during a meeting or outside of a meeting. So thank you for your service.
Thank you, Noah. Next item is we have the approval of minutes from November 17th, 2010, and February 17th. And so far, Richard had a comment about...
I would move that we approve the minutes of November 17th. They appear to be correct. The minutes for February the 17th shows a member being here that was not present that night, and that's Jenny Brantley. Otherwise, I'd move they be approved.
All right, so noted. Jenny wasn't here. And so... All right. And all those in favor of accepting minutes?
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. All right. The minutes have been accepted. All right. Next, we have director's reports. And as we go through the director's report, if you'd like to, Ron, are you ready to speak to this? Or usually when we have the director's report, we kind of go through it and kind of give people a chance to make comments, or... Maybe this we'll do that for next time, so we'll go round robin right now. Richard, I see you have some notes there. Would you like to start off with the director's report?
Under wastewater.
Comment that I think it might be wiser to start over again and cut the losses that we have on the plans for the wastewater treatment plant. It seems that there's a lot of feeling that the plant should be located elsewhere, and I would go along with that. Uh-huh. That's just a note.
All right.
Do you have any further comments on something else?
Yes, on the fire station, was approval received for the HVAC requirement to be changed?
Where we're at on the fire station, we're actually out to bid right now. So we've gotten all of those issues cleaned up and taken care of.
Okay.
It's been quite a process. It delayed us about a year. But we're out to bid right now. Bids close at this point on June 30th or 28th, I believe, is the date. So we're looking forward to getting those bids and seeing who wins it. And then construction should start in September of this year. So we're on track for a September start on the second phase of the fire station.
As a point of curiosity, where do they manufacture this type of equipment?
And construction would go over the course of this winter would be our anticipated timeline on Lift Station 2. Lift Station 3 will follow that. Just as a resource kind of allocation, we'll do one, then we'll do the other. I don't think we'll do them both concurrently. But that will go out to bid following Lift Station 2. So we'll have that out to bid and then award a contract and get moving. Currently, there's no major problems with the lift station, although we've got an issue where there's a dry well. So there's two pits. One of the pits is filled with sewage. The other pit has pumps. And those pumps are what operate the lift station. That dry well, that dry pit that the pumps sit in, is starting to leak. And so we've gone through at one point, and we've done some grouting into the soil, some chemical grouting to try to stop that leaking. We've slowed it way down. But what that tells us is that it's getting very near the end. It's a tin can that's rusting out, basically. And so its useful life is all but up. So I would anticipate probably early next year or summer of next year that contract being let and the replacement of the lift station occurring.
I know that you've spoken the past few years about Lift Station 2 being moved above ground. Do you foresee doing the same thing with all of the lift stations?
Yeah, Lift Station 2 and 3 both will. Lift Station 1, which is sort of by Cloisters Park, is already that design where there's the wet well, but it doesn't require man entry. And what we're trying to move away from is those deep vaults that men have to crawl down into and work in a confined space that has the potential for flooding or other sort of hazardous materials entering it. So it's a fairly hazardous entry. Our staff's trained, and they do a good job at keeping themselves safe. But, yeah, we are moving away from the wet well, dry well style lift station and moving to a wet well lift station with submersible pumps. And that way, when you have a problem, rather than sending a guy down there to fix it, you just pull the pump up, and then they work on it on the back of their truck, and it seems to be a little bit better. So I think the industry in general is kind of moving in that direction.
And so I guess P-Web will be seeing, as they go start the design process, we'll kind of see this start to happen?
We could certainly bring it to you guys. We're fairly far along in the design process on Lift Station 3. We're at about 90%, so we've gotten the conceptual work all done. We're into the nitty-gritty and the details. So if you guys want to see those, I know Lift Station 2 has been prepared for some time. We certainly could do like a presentation or some kind of report on the lift stations and what our plans are there and bring some site plans in for you guys to look at.
No, I would be just interested in knowing, having talked about it over the last few years and knowing that it's kind of important to Public Works in the city, I would like to see it. It'd be interesting to see.
Okay. Well, I'll make a note of that.
All right. Thanks. Is anybody...
I have one quick question.
Sure. Go ahead.
Under the stormwater section, the second part, and it talks about the council adopting the new stormwater regulations. Is that the same as the stormwater management plan for this? I guess my quick question is, has regional water quality bought into the stormwater management plan you have in place?
As part of our stormwater management plan, one of our requirements was to develop an illicit discharge ordinance, which is half of the stormwater this new stormwater ordinance. The other requirement was to develop interim hydromodification and LID requirements. There's currently a joint effort in the region going on for hydromodification control plans. They're not quite ready to roll that out yet, but the regional board required us to adopt interim standards. So we are, for small projects, it'll be basically voluntary LID type measures for larger commercial projects. You'll have, it'll be like a Chinese menu type of option where you select, you know, one LID feature from this column and one from this column to complete your project.
Because I was going to say, if you got yours already approved through regional water quality, you probably would have been the first.
Yeah. They actually didn't require that the ordinance be approved by them prior to adopting it.
Oh, okay.
So you, we kind of, by doing this, they reviewed it and didn't have any comments for us, but we'll submit it at our next year's annual report.
Oh.
But you get kind of in a do loop with this agency, is they won't comment on it till next year's official annual report, and we may be back revising our ordinance the subsequent year.
It's a moving target.
It is.
And I can appreciate that. Go ahead.
Bill, did you have a question?
No.
Richard? Go ahead, Richard.
I had another question. I noticed we got a grant for $15,000. Will that affect that West Side Trail, bike trail?
No, that's completely separate from the then a series of breakout tables for the different issues that people can go around and visit and ask detailed questions. And then at the end of the meeting, we'll sum up those questions and make sure we've captured everybody's ideas so that DUDEC, our consultant on the wastewater treatment plant alternatives analysis, can go back and prepare this rough screening. Then later on in September, we'll come back with another workshop with the results of that for presentation and discussion.
What night was that again that you gave?
What were the dates?
The nighttime meeting.
Yes. June 27th from 6 p.m. till 8 p.m. in the Veterans Memorial Building right here at whatever address here. Let me.
What date was that?
June 27th. Monday, June 27th.
What was the date on the 11 a.m. thing?
Tuesday, June 28th.
June 28th?
Yes, from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. And we're at 209 Surf Street. In case anybody out there watching needs to find, it's the Veterans Memorial Building at the top of the bluff. Either come down Surf Street or go to the Embarcadero first and walk up the stairs and enjoy our workshops. We did have an email, as you mentioned earlier, regarding street improvements. Just want to point out to everybody that the day-to-day operations for street repairs has been shifted to the Recreation and Parks Division, and anybody that wants to call and get added to the ever-growing pothole list can call 772-6278. There will be a menu tree to get to street repairs. Another option is on the city's website under Recreation and Parks tab for departments, there's an e-form that you could fill out with the description of the issue that you want a work order done, and then you'll receive contact back from that department. To the council meeting on June 28th, we'll be presenting the city's pavement management plan. I know I keep talking about this, and it's been a long time, and we have accumulated about $900,000 in Measure Q funds from the subsequent years, our local tax override on our sales tax, and we have a plan to use that $900,000 the first year, and we have a plan to spend $250,000 in subsequent years for this pavement management plan. Now, the emphasis of our pavement management plan is on pavement preservation. So instead of worst first, it's best first to preserve what we have, because I think I've discussed this to some people's nausea, but the pavement degradation curve starts out flat for a good part of its life and then drops rather drastically and then levels back off again. If you're in that drop-off, you really need to make full kind of use of let it finally fail completely before you invest heavily in those street improvements. So, I mean, we have a lot of streets that are in that condition, and especially in the from Highway 41 north, because of the different soil type in that area, more clay soil rather than the forgiving sand in the south section of Morro Bay. So we are pursuing other options for those streets outside of the funding that we received through the Measure Q funding. We received a grant from the regional board regarding, or we're in the final running, and we've been told we're going to receive a grant, keeping our fingers crossed, for a complete Green Streets planning program so that we can get a street design in place, so that when the, if you kind of put more components into it, you can compete for more of the grant funding that's available. There's not that money for just paving of streets, but if you can include low-impact development features in your street, pedestrian improvements, bicycle improvements to your streets, you open yourself up to the availability of additional funds. So we're trying to keep that in mind as we're planning for the streets in the north as a group. One of the issues also is you shouldn't have to call in or report potholes. Our street crew is made up of two guys. They do see a lot of the potholes and direct their own work towards those. But it can't hurt to report your favorite pothole to the city.
Thank you.
Rob, in terms of your funding sources that you're talking about for various parts of the town, one of the funding sources you're looking into, especially there in the tree streets near Del Mar, is the Safe Route to Schools?
Yes, we're in the process of working with Del Mar School and developing an application for Safe Routes for Greenwood Street. That was a council-designated pedestrian route a few years ago. And working it really for a successful Safe Routes to School grant, it has to be a joint effort between the school district, the funding authority, which is our SLOCOG, and the city. So we are working jointly on putting a competitive package together. I think what we're going to do is probably put a couple of packages together, one that we can be more assured of getting, which is would be more of a typical street improvement project where you do standard curb, gutter, and sidewalks. I think some of the group would like to see more innovative features along with that, maybe a bicycle boulevard, perhaps some LID features. But we really want to get at least some funding for you know, if we can't get anything else, because Safe Routes to School, the money is intended for not to fund, you know, paving of your street, or but it's for those pedestrian improvements. So we would like to assure ourselves that we have a competitive grant for that, and also if we can add something else to it, make that also available.
Rob, I have a question. Has anything progressed as far as the Quintana and South Bay intersection? You know, we were talking about having stop signs or something.
There, no stop signs will be put on South Bay Boulevard at that intersection. There is there. It doesn't meet the warrants for cross traffic. There's not the volume there. What we had talked about, and what the tasks for our maintenance crews is for a flashing warning light there to alert the drivers that there is that intersection there. The volumes on South Bay Boulevard in the range of, during the weekday, 14,000 trips per day. The crossing on Quintana is in the hundreds of trips per day. So it doesn't meet the volume warrants to stop that through traffic there. And there really is no accident history to speak of.
I've observed several accidents there.
A reported accident history. Right.
Where the police were called out. And it's been a, one of the things that seems to be a problem is there's no left turn.
Right. There's not enough width there to get a left turn lane in because there is a transit stop there. And we don't want to lose that transit stop. So there's really limited. We're constrained by a drainage swale on one side, the hillside on the other. Not a whole lot of places for people to go. Unfortunately, you know, South Bay has become a kind of a highway for Los Osos within our city limits.
So are you looking at like a yellow flash?
A yellow flashing warning of that intersection.
On the north-south portion. Of
exactly.
It.
And, you know, at that yellow, there's a yellow cross there, putting it on that same post. I can send you an email of the update of the status of that. I neglected to check with our maintenance crews to see where that is in their queue of getting done.
I appreciate that. Thank
okay,
you.
Thank you.
All right. I have a question turning to what page would that be? Looks like 2 of 3 talking about water. And could you, Dylan or Rob, talk about the Morrow and Chorro Valley? I know I can read what you say about hiring an attorney. Can you give us any further update about what's going on with those two areas?
Very, very slow incremental progress. I came back this morning from a meeting in Sacramento yesterday. We met with the State Water Resources Control Board to talk about in the Chorro Valley we have a water rights complaint that's been filed against us, and then we've also are working on a petition to ask them for more time to work on our water rights there. It was a very successful. If there were a problem, we would be door to door with megaphones in the streets and on the TV trying to tell everybody that there were. So I don't want people to panic or worry about your water. It's safe to drink. In terms of the Morro Basin, all of the water that we use is being treated through the brackish water reverse osmosis system. In the Chorro Basin, we don't have treatment. So we've really cut back and scaled back our usage of that basin because of that.
Does it get blended with state water?
It does. Our typical blend, over the course of a year, we're probably 80-90% state water and then 10-20% groundwater. Last year, 2010, because we had just brought the brackish system online at the end of 2009, we made heavy use of the brackish system, so we were about 70-30 last year in terms of groundwater-state water split. Your typical our typical operating week, so what we probably did last week, would have been 90-95% state water, and then we use the brackish system to kind of top off the tanks. And then there are periods of time, though, especially in the fall, when the state water shutdown period occurs, that will rely very heavily on our groundwater basins.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Do we have any other questions in the director's report?
Bill, did you have any?
No? All right. Moving on then. Thank you, gentlemen. New business, election of chair and vice chair. Richard and I got lonely up here our last meeting. There wasn't enough people to. So it's kind of interesting to have all these new bodies, isn't it, Richard?
It is.
And with that in mind, our chairperson sits for a year, and then we vote for a new chair. So with that in mind,
I'd like to nominate Matt to serve as chair again this coming year.
I'll second it.
All right. Do we vote on it now? I'm fine with that.
Yes.
All right. All those in favor?
Aye.
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 And we need a vice chair. Richard, I think you said before you didn't want to do it, or would you be? Oh, would you? Okay, then I would like to nominate Richard.
I'll second it.
And a second, all those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
All right. And so Richard is vice chair. Maybe last time you were going out, remember when you were traveling?
Oh, yes.
Okay. All right, so we have a chairperson and vice chair for another year. And next up on new business is the 2010. Can we put 2011 on here, or do we have to put 2010?
We're going to stick with 2010, but I can explain why.
All right, there we go. He's purposely leading us down the primrose path. All right, and Dylan, you go on and explain that.
I won't take credit for it, though. Actually, the state typically in years ending with, well, here we'll jump into it. In years ending with 5 and 10s, urban water purveyors are required to prepare an urban water management plan. What that means or what this comes from, it's an offshoot of the droughts in the late 70s that California experienced. They decided that water purveyors really needed to kind of take a longer view. So this plan, you prepare it and update it every 5 years, and you look out into the future 25, 30 years at your water supply in five-year increments to try to determine, okay, best-case scenario, what's it going to look like? Worst-case scenario, what's it going to look like? And then you're constantly revisiting it. But in addition to the cities constantly revisiting it, the state has been fairly active as well. And so there's some legislation that was passed late in 2010, Senate Bill 7X7. So it was a special session Senate bill that made some fairly significant changes to the requirements of the Urban Water Management Plan. And so the state granted a time extension to water purveyors to prepare that plan and then to themselves to prepare the guidebook. So the guidebook, I got a little picture of it up there, was prepared, I think they finalized that in March of this year. And then the plans have to be adopted by July 1st. And so on June 28th, we'll have a public hearing to consider adoption of this plan, and we welcome public comments. So in that public hearing, there's a few things we're required to discuss. That Senate bill required, it's an offshoot of the governor's 20 by 2020 plan, which was a reduction of 20% across the board in the state of water usage by 2020. So it's a fairly aggressive mandate to reduce water usage. And then from that, the state developed three or four methodologies to sort of direct the water purveyors how to achieve that goal or how they were going to measure that. And we'll talk about that in a little bit here. So that this plan then has been revised to reflect that reduction. Depending on how you see your growth and the weather and other factors, that 20% reduction may or may not actually occur. I'm not entirely optimistic that it will, that you see that could impact your supplies and your contingency plans to deal with that. Section 6 talks about demand management measures, and then Section 7 in our plan is a reference. So I'll run through each of these chapters in a little bit of detail. This plan, I'll post it on the city's website. I think it'll be up on Monday. So if there's members of the public who want to get into the nuts and bolts of it more than we do tonight, they can go onto the city's website and take a look at that. That'll be under Public Services, Water Division, and we have a section called Water Documents, and it should be in there. But if anybody's curious or can't find it, they can give us a call or send me an email, and I'll point them in the right direction. So like I said, that should be available on Monday. Also, we'll print a hard copy and make that available. Public Services, I'll probably put one in the library as well. So if somebody wants to get in there and read it, that should be available for a couple weeks. All right, sections 1 and 2. I'm just going to kind of blow through this, and then if you guys have any questions, feel free to jump in and ask them. Section 1 is plan preparation. So the highlights from that, we're basically following the Department of Water Resources template exactly. So they prepared a template and said, this is exactly how we want you to do it. They've given us specific tables to populate. We've done that. DWR doesn't review the plans for content. What they're looking for is actually, did you get all the pieces there? So they're looking for completeness, and they go through and do a fairly thorough review to make sure that the plans are complete.
Dylan, can I interrupt for a second?
Of course.
I'm just reading as I'm listening to you talk about preparation and how there's a template to do this, yep. And I see the fiscal impact. And the city paid $105,000 for someone to write this?
Yes, we did.
How long did it take?
Their contract began in, February. Or March. It'll run through July. So it's been a fairly compressed, would actually probably cost us more than if we could have spread it out. But you couldn't because the guidance document wasn't prepared until late.
Okay.
So it's kind of a catch-22 that the state gave us this more time, but then they didn't finalize. One of the methods for kind of the technical methods of how you determine your baseline and your water targets hasn't even been completed yet. So it's been sort of a moving target for the water purveyors, which is why we hired somebody. I just couldn't lock myself in a room and type for a month and a half to get this thing done.
No, I understand that, and it makes complete sense given the timeline. I'm just thinking reduction in staff over the last couple of years, and then all of a sudden we pay for a staff salary to get one document done.
That's the way it goes. I mean, the using consultants can be expensive, although they can bring you expertise that you can't afford to develop in-house. So there's certainly a trade-off there.
I understand this, and I guess it's a note to all those Cal Poly technical writing students to keep going and get good grades.
Yeah, sharpen your pencils and get a good degree, I guess, is
now,
part
Dylan,
of the
moral. Your last stormwater, urban water management plan, that had to be in 2000, then, is that correct?
2005.
I thought it didn't get adopted.
It got adopted in early 2006.
Oh, it did.
It was reviewed by DWR. We got comments from them in late 2008. They did not approve our plan, and so but it was adopted by council, so it became a policy document. And actually, it just didn't get approved by DWR.
Thank you.
So we've kind of gone in a different direction. The 2005 plan actually is available on the city's website as well. It's a dearth of information about Morro Bay's water supply and history. It's a great source. It was very helpful to me when I first started at Morro Bay and kind of getting a picture. Our 2010 plan is not as great of a source for that purpose, but it does sort of match the template. So we're running through and really checking the boxes for the state. We want to get this plan approved the first time. And the reason for that is completion of the plan basically allows us to receive certain types of state and federal monies. So
if I could interrupt real quick, because not to belabor it, but what sort of funding would the city want to apply for that it's so necessary to expedite and get this done?
Sure. A significant project, and I think I outlined this in the staff report, probably the most significant project would be the SRF funding anticipated for the wastewater treatment plant upgrade, the state revolving loan, which is a low-interest loan that is basically a pool of money that the federal government makes available to states, and then the states distribute it to water purveyors, wastewater purveyors, at reduced interest rates, which could have a significant impact on wastewater rates in the future. So that was one specific project. There are other those. Most grants are conditioned now, and the state's really putting a lot of pressure through DWR and California Department of Public Health. Any of the grant programs that they're running, they're really pushing to condition agencies so that in 2015 and then 2020, in 2020, if you don't meet your targets, then you lose eligibility for state funding for a lot of those grants. And those are really important to us. Right now, for example, we have a $600,000 grant to help us with the Morro nitrate issues. So it's a fairly significant amount of money that we're chasing and that we could lose eligibility for if we don't get this through. And then it's somewhat pronounced here is that our water demands, so the curve kind of how water is being used, we use less water in the winter, January, February typically. This year especially, we use virtually no water in January and February because of how wet it was. So when it's wet, we typically use less water. And then we peak higher in the dry season. We peak a lot higher maybe than some other places because of our tourist influence. So it's basically inversely proportional to rainfall. Kind of when it's raining, we typically use it less, and then when it's not raining, we use more. This is the method that we selected. There were four methods outlined by the state on how to meet your target. The state prepared a plan in talking about the Delta and some plans there. They basically went through the state and broke it up into hydraulic regions. So this map is a map of that. It shows the different hydraulic regions in the state. We're in the Central Coast hydraulic region, and what they said was average usage was about 154 gallons per person per day, so gallons per capita daily. And then they set some targets on what they thought that should be. So this was the methodology that the state used. It was one of the four, and this is the one that best fit our water supply scenario. Another way to meet the targets, so let me talk a little bit about that. The water use target for Morro Bay in 2015 will be 119 gallons per capita daily. In 2020, we have to reduce that down to 113, and that's based off of our baseline. You had to run both a 10-year and a 5-year baseline. Our average usage for the 5-year or for the 10-year baseline was 125. Last year, though, we were about 106 because of the weather, and then also the economic downturn. So we more than met our target last year by having a bad economic year and having a white year. Anyways, looking ahead, basically demands jump around, and projected demands are about 1,500 acre feet in 2035. Last year we used a little over 1,250. The years previous to that, we were right around 1,400 acre feet. So water usage can jump around a little bit, but the states accounted for that and by basically having you run these 10-year averages to determine your baseline. And then in 2020, you're going to have to meet that. So kind of, I think, tell everybody you know to pray for rain in 2020 is kind of the thing I think most state agencies, water providers are going to ask for.
Is your breakdown based on residential users only? Are you separating out the parks?
No, it's actually, that's a great question and kind of a sore subject with me. Because Morobay is a tourist town. And so all of our usage gets rolled into our permanent population. So the visitor population doesn't count. So if we have a campground full of people, that usage gets accounted to our permanent population. So when we talk about these gallons per capita daily, Morobay 106, they said if you were below 100, you didn't need to do anything. You were perfect. You were the model place. Well, we were real close to that. And if you had taken out our tourist population, we would have been well below that. So Morobay does a great job at conserving. I want to encourage everybody to continue to do that. It's important for us, and it's been helpful to us in managing tight water supply circumstances. But that is a gross number. So you take the total water that was used in the city by commercial, institutional, watering, parks, everything, and then you divide it by the number of people. And so some communities are really going to struggle. For example, like the ski resorts, where in the summer they may have a permanent population of 300 or 400 people, and then in the winter their population soars. So there's different water suppliers throughout the state, or some of the ag users also were complaining about that they were providing huge quantities of water because everybody's irrigating 5,000 acres, but there's only 300 or 400 people, so their usage is absurd. But the state chose this as the method to use. Kind of cognizant that there probably wasn't a better one to use. Anytime you kind of go with a statewide standard, you miss sort of the one-offs or the unique circumstances. And so that gallons per capita daily it's sort of a coarse way to do it.
Well, the quick thing then is when you do the wastewater treatment plant, and if you do have the ability to use reclaimed water towards your parks and other things, it seems to me you'd probably fall into compliance with what they're looking for.
If you have more than 10% of your supply made available through reclaimed water, then they cut you a break. It doesn't change kind of what we would have to do very much. But we did anticipate, and I'll get to that actually in one of the next slides. So that's a great intro. So here's historic water use in Morobay. Jumping around right about, we've peaked out about 1,500 here a few years ago in 1990, 1997. Our population is charted in blue, jumping around as well. And then our water usage. So you can kind of see the weather pattern in here. I really like this graph because the usage goes up as you get to dry years, then you get a wet year, it drops, then it comes up as it dries out. You sort of see California's 7-year, 34, 35% year. So we really rely heavily on state water. It makes sense because of our large fixed costs on state water. It's a significant portion, 60-70% of the water budget are those fixed costs on state water. So we try to maximize the use of state water because the variable cost is very small. So we've held our water rates since 1995. I heard, I haven't read the article yet, that we got kind of poked by the grand jury for doing that. And they said we should raise our rates more often and more early. But we've held our water rates since 1995. At some point in the future, we probably are going to have to dive into that. I would guess this year and maybe next year, kind of starting that discussion. But we do. We rely very heavily on state water. Our local groundwater basins are our historic sources. And in Mora, we have permits that allow us to divert 581. In the Chorro Basin, it's 1,142.5. I chopped the half off just to kind of shorten it a little bit. Reliably, we can get that out of the Morro Basin with the treatment that we've installed, the brackish treatment. We've sort of restored the reliability of the Morro Basin. In the past few years, we've struggled in the Morro Basin, first with MTBE and then with nitrates in 2006. So we've kind of closed that chapter, though, where I think we've put most of those big issues behind us. We have a few more upgrades to make to that plant, but we're sort of hesitantly say out of the woods on the nitrate issue in the Morro Basin. The Chorro Basin, the 1142 acre feet that we can extract, has some constraints on it. It has nitrate issues as well. We also have a stream bypass condition that requires us to only extract from the basin when the stream's flowing above 1.4 CFS in order to protect the steelhead runs. And so that condition this year wouldn't be a problem. We've got plenty of flow in that creek, but a lot of years that creek goes dry. And so that has the potential to limit our ability to extract water from the Chorro Basin. So safe yield in that basin, I think we've calculated about 566. And then we have the desalination plant that could provide 645 acre feet per year of permitted production. We've never approached that. I think
I'm sorry.
Go ahead.
Real quick, is that coming from the Morro Basin of the 581, or is that?
No, that's separate. That's saltwater conversion of 645. Okay. And those two systems, I think later this year we've got a project that will allow us to operate both of those simultaneously. So long term, there are some issues with the desalting process. It has an iron accumulation problem that needs to be resolved, as well as we have insufficient pumping capacity because we have both the brackish and the salt water that we kind of retrofitted in a hurry in 2009. So we're going back through and kind of cleaning those issues up. And here in a year or two, I think we'll be able to produce all of the water from the Morro Basin reliably, as well as desalt that full amount if we needed to. Desalting, though, is always going to be our sort of resource of last choice because it's just so expensive. It's about $1,600 an acre foot to desalt that water. You burn a tremendous amount of energy. And so we'll really rely on state water and then our local groundwater basins as a first measure. And then we'll use desalting as a last measure. But it's great to have because it's a drought-proof resource. So that's a little bit about our sources of supply. We talk about in the plan, and we'll talk about kind of some of the highlights. Morro Bay isn't really in the market for new water supply sources. So we don't need to go out and purchase. For example, Nacimiento came and went, and we kind of sat on the sideline for that. Where we do have some opportunities, I think, and are written into the plan, one is exchanges and emergency agreements with other agencies. So we've done that in the past. We've had an emergency agreement with Whale Rock. We've gotten water from the California Men's Colony previously. The power plant in Morro Bay has its own little water system, and we had once upon a time an emergency exchange agreement with them, and we'll probably get back into one of those. And I look at those as a way of hopefully when we have an emergency, everybody else isn't having the same emergency, and they would be able to provide water to us, and then we would reciprocate in the unlikely event that they had a problem. So that's kind of the intent, is that you sort of all collectively tying yourselves together can, I guess it's like chaining life jackets together, right? You sort of stay together and then hope that you do better. The other thing that's coming up in the planning horizon of this document, so we counted it by 2020. We have a very good reclaimed water plan. It was prepared in 1999 by Carollo, but it's a very good document, very useful. And that plan has about 400 acre feet of reclaimed water, basically, that they identify that we could provide in Morro Bay. So they sort of capped our demand out at about 400 acre feet. And we would anticipate through the wastewater treatment plant sort of eyeing towards that, and then at some point that would actually come online and start replacing demands as those demands occurred. So we've counted for that in this plan. And then just sort of, that doesn't mean, though, that like in the last few years, the contamination events that have occurred or during a shutdown, that there may not be some sort of localized problems that need to be dealt with. Section 6 talks about water demand management measures, and there's specific measures that the state has identified. They match the California Urban Water Conservation Council. Went through and prepared 14 BMPs, and they said these are the best sort of water-saving tools that water agencies can use. And then the state adopted those and basically made them legislation and said you have to do these. So this is what they are. And they're water survey programs for residential customers, residential plumbing retrofits, so toilets, system water audits, leak detection and repairs, metering with commodity rates, large landscape irrigation, high-efficiency washing machines, public information programs, school education programs, conservation programs for large users, so those commercial industrial accounts, wholesale agency assistance, which wouldn't relate to us, conservation-based pricing, a water conservation coordinator, a water waste prohibition, and ultra-low flush toilet replacement. So we've gone through and kind of measured our progress on some of those fronts. We're not doing all of them. For example, door-to-door, sort of in-the-home water surveys, we aren't doing that. And we're allowed by the state to exempt ourselves from doing that when we can demonstrate that it's not cost-effective for us to do so.
Dylan, where does gray water work and fit in there? Which one was that?
Gray water wouldn't be. It's not one of the mandated techniques or technologies. I think Morbay's been very friendly to gray water, and the plumbing code I think is getting better in that regard. So it's becoming easier and easier for the average person to hook up a washing machine to a gray water system. But it's not one of the mandatory measures in the program.
No, okay. Just bringing it up now so folks, when they do watch, they think these aren't the only ones that they can.
No, they certainly aren't. And these aren't the only things that we're doing either. These are just the ones that the state says you have to specifically talk about and tell us what you're doing with those. The other one that we kind of are struggling with is the school program. We don't have a school program in place. I think it's interesting. The schools have a very tight curriculum. It's a lot harder than you would think to be able to get into a school and to teach those kids something. The state has a curriculum. The teachers are teaching to that curriculum. The kids are being tested to that curriculum, and that system really doesn't want to deviate much from that. So it's a lot harder nut to crack than one would think. But that's something I think we'll work on in this next iteration of the plan in the next 5 years, trying to get into the school and provide some more educational outreach and benefits. So we're working on these programs. In Morro Bay, probably the best one that we've done is the...
Hey, Dylan? Yes. I'm sorry, real quick
before you
leave that part of it.
Sure.
From a planning standpoint, has the city ever got into requiring retrofitting of existing units for new development to try and mitigate?
Yes, historically.
They have.
Yeah, in the 80s, the city had a large program. What we found is the toilet retrofits, we have a documented saturation rate of about 80-something percent on toilet retrofits. I think that's about as high as you're ever going to document.
Yeah, that's the question I'm wondering, because there's a lot of older homes here, but I don't know if they ever went.
And my guess is most of the older homes in Morro Bay have new toilets in them.
Oh.
And if they don't, we'll give you a rebate if you buy one. So I don't know how to plug it any better than that.
I appreciate that.
And you'll save water. The old-fashioned toilets are about 3 gallons plus per flush. I think virtually any toilet you buy in the store today is going to be lower than about 1.5. And then coming very soon, I think in July, the building code's dropping that down to 1.2.
Yes, it'll be required for 1.2 gallons per flush. Will
Does
be the
it
new
give you
standard.
Problems with the collection system on your sewer?
We haven't had some of the problems that other agencies have. We're fairly fortunate in that the layout of our collection system... Think about the north end. It's a great example. You've got all those residential houses going up the hill.
Oh, right.
Well, you can move that material down that hill. It's coming down that hill awfully fast.
Come down without water.
Yeah, and so we haven't had the problems that some other agencies have where there's not enough water to keep the material moving. In time, though, that is a possibility, although I'm not terribly concerned about that.
So you have decent grade on all your...
Yeah, we have decent grade. And then it all kind of points to the plant. Most of the north end drains by gravity. So we're pretty good in our collection system. And then our guys are fairly aggressive at maintenance also. So we're in there flushing those lines and making sure that things don't stack up. Any other questions about water conservation? So those are required measures. The public review draft will be posted on the city's website. We'll have a hard copy at public services. The hearing will be June 28th at the city council meeting. It's a product that doesn't get better with age. It doesn't age well. And so we want to get it to you as fresh after treatment as we can. So you're balancing storage with system demands and where you put the storage in the system to try to make sure that you're getting a good turnover and nobody's getting old water. But yeah, we're in decent shape.
Okay, thank you.
You're welcome. And I didn't cover that. Any other questions that you guys would like to ask tonight?
I have a question here.
Go ahead, Bill.
In travels, I have found that there are some motels have a shower valve that I consider a water waster. I think in particular up in Willits, the best motel in Willits, I forget it, but every time we get in there, oh my God, here's that dang shower valve, and you have to crank up way more volume than you want to get the temperature you want, you know. And I just hope we don't have anything like that here. And if we do, have we got a means of figuring it out?
Well, we've had in the past, and we'll continue in the future, when we've done plumbing retrofits, we've actually provided low-flow shower heads and then also sink aerators, because those are two things, especially in older homes or older facilities, that can be pretty high users of water. You get that stream going full blast, and then you can be putting out in the shower 5-6 gallons a minute. So I'd encourage everybody to use low flow. We've handed them out and installed some during the retrofits. So I don't think we have a lot of places that are using a ton of water. One of the best things we've done for water conservation in Morro Bay, though, is our rate structure. That rate structure is every unit of water that you use costs you more than the last one. And so that really has encouraged people to be wise about their water use. I think if you drive around and look at just the landscapes in Morro Bay, we have a lot of sort of xeriscape. There's a lot of succulents that are very low water users. So I think in general, Morro Bay is doing and has done a pretty good job at conserving water. I always encourage people to keep doing that. And then in this, if there's any questions about the plan or our water supply, we're very easy to find at public services, right across the street from the library. And virtually for the asking, you can have a few minutes of staff time to talk about any of these things or if you have concerns. Also, I just wanted to throw out there, this isn't part of my presentation, but I'll slip it in. Look for next week, I believe, everybody should be getting in the mail their consumer confidence report. It'll have a blue cover with water drops on it. And that report walks you through anything and everything that we've tested for and found in either our system or in our wells. So it gives you a very complete picture of the water quality in Morro Bay. It's a, sort of an all-inclusive document that kind of discloses everything. So look for that, and that often prompts questions for people. And if they have questions about that or this or anything else related to water, just come see me at the public services. And that, with that, I'll conclude my report. Thank you, gentlemen.
Thank you.
Well, thanks a lot, Dylan. And all right, so folks, that plan is going to be available pretty soon out there in Morro Bay. If you want to find out about your how water is treated here in Morro Bay, I recommend going to read that. Next up, we have Rob. We're going to talk about the revision to Water Meter Engineering Standard, W3.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Over the past several years, it's been brought to light, especially by Board Member Olson, that we have a problem with leaks occurring on the residential side of the meter, and a lot of those leaks occur because of the Schedule 40 PVC fittings cracking right at the meter, and the Water Utility Billing Review Committee, which also has our water distribution supervisor on there, has suggested that we add a requirement for a Schedule 80 fitting coming out of the meter. And I also took the opportunity to add something else to our standards that I'm familiar with from other agencies, is adding a quarter-turn ball valve just on the customer side of the meter as a shutoff valve that the customer can operate. Having a customer to try to operate that meter stop on the city side of the meter is difficult at best and can cause problems with broken meter stops and unsuccessful water turnoffs at the best. At the worst, a loss of a lot of water. So what I'm proposing to do is to change our W3, our water service connection, to add that quarter turn ball valve and a Schedule 80 fitting there that would be provided by the city with the meter installation for the customer or customer's plumber to connect to. this will add an average on average about $40 to, because of the water sprinkler requirements these days.
Oh.
It's usually a 1-inch water service, or sometimes even an inch and a half because of the demands for the sprinkler. Calculation
is still called the 3/4 PE.
And we still have some of those. So in some higher pressure areas, you can get by with a 3/4.
Oh, okay.
But almost everybody with the sprinkler demands has gone to a 1-inch.
Yeah. I'll thank you for pointing that out. Oh. I didn't even notice that there. I'll make that change. Basically, from the water main through the meter, that's all city-installed equipment. And then the customer ties in right at the water meter.
Right, at that slip fitting you're putting on, thread by slip. Okay, thank you.
All right, well, thanks, Rob, and thanks, Bill, for your work on that. Keeping Rob on his toes.
I've got a question
here.
So you're planning on this is a new installation, and the city will supply a ball valve and a Schedule 80 PVC fitting.
Correct.
So they may not, the builder may not put a Schedule 80 pipe from there on.
Correct. We are not proposing to modify the plumbing code.
They use copper, like I think they should. You don't need the Schedule 80 PVC.
Correct. PVC is allowed by the plumbing code, and the change to the IC codes is more difficult than changing our engineering standards.
Of course, we've had many, many of these things, and on the water meter, the water board, you know. But I've always assumed that these old things were old steel pipes corroding through. Then I discovered that one of them from the cloisters broke, and I asked the question, how in the world can one that new go? And the meter reader told me that, that was a Schedule 40 pipe. And I said, what in the world is a... Why you got a Schedule 40 pipe there? It never occurred to me anybody was that stupid to put in a Schedule 40 pipe and under the high-pressure line. Although I know the rating for a Schedule 40 pipe and that for pressure is high enough to hold it. But will it hold a surge if the fire department closes off, is testing the fire hydrant, and they close that fire hydrant, you got a surge through the system... will that Schedule 40 pipe hold it? I don't know.
Well, typically it's not from the internal pressure is the reason these fail. It's due to settlement.
I know the fittings usually break, but I was hoping to see an ordinance created that would disallow Schedule 40 pipe in there and require at least Schedule 80.
Like I said... We're working with the engineering standards, and it's more difficult to change the international plumbing code and by local means.
Well, I always assumed when I found out that this plumbing code permitted this, I assumed that the people who wrote the plumbing code figured like I did. Well, who's stupid enough to put a Schedule 40 pipe in? So therefore, they just disregarded it. They didn't think it was happening.
I think with proper bedding and installation techniques, Schedule 40 is an appropriate material to use for water. Not everybody builds things as carefully as you should or per the pipe manufacturer's recommendation. I think with this change, it allows some a little bit more certainty because that fitting is a common break point. Also, by adding the customer valve on the backside of the meter, it allows you to actually shut off your water at the meter fairly easily and to make those repairs readily and quickly.
Well, if you think this is okay, I'll go along with it.
Okay, do we have any further comments? Thank you, Bill, for your comments, and thank you, Rob. No further comments? All right, moving on. There is old business. There is none. We're talking about future agenda items. And we have three.
Wait a minute.
Go ahead.
We have to pass a.
No action is required on the water meter change. That is under my authority as the city engineer to make changes to the engineering standards as I see fit.
Okay.
And we find the right date that we can all get together for that tour. We'll probably do it later in, try to get it out later in the afternoon, maybe midweek. We have some additional daylight because it's summer. Try to get this done while it's still summer. Also, I wanted to add, we'll also be bringing to the Public Works Advisory Board a transit item probably after your next meeting, I believe. For the next meeting.
Do you have any idea what it's going to be about?
I'm thinking it's the results of the transit efficiency studies, working with RTA and SLOCOG and trying to get all, getting the schedules aligned, getting the all of the transit providers in this area working together and perhaps other options for transit.
Okay. Let me see. Then Dillon Water Conservation, is that kind of one of these things that kind of rolls, or did you want to rolls over? Or did you want to do that in August?
No, let's roll that one. Collection system repairs, you had expressed some interest in the lift stations. I've got a new assistant starting, a contract assistant will be starting on Monday, and I'll have him start working on the collection system repairs. So we may be able to bring that one. But if you guys can leave me sort of a unscheduled, and then I'll slip on if I can, that would be great.
All right, I will further. Okay, here we go. A little bit of a monopoly here.
There you go.
No problem letting that one kind of. If you can get that together by August. But what about the water metering online demonstration? If you could we have that in August, where we can demonstrate for the folks, for those of you out in Morro Bay who aren't using our online billing or water metering. It's really a good tool for us to use as Morro Bay citizens, and I know we've been talking about it for at least 6-8 months.
I'll make that trade.
All right, so,
you
go.
That's
can
have. We'll bring that demonstration on water billing and the online system for August.
Okay.
We'll play with that. Maybe a PowerPoint. We may actually be able to do a live session.
We'll
kind of dive into that.
I know last time you said that since we were so new to it, that getting the slides and making PowerPoint. Screenshots. It would be a little bit of labor.
Yep. So we'll figure that out, though.
All right. What about, I know on the director's report, and Rob, you did a good job of pointing out to people listening, is that, and folks, it's kind of counterintuitive out there in Morro Bay, that Parks and Recs are now taking care of our streets, but that's how it works. And so it's really important that when you have a street issue, you call Parks and Rec. But one thing, I would like to see some sort of I think it's still within the umbrella of PWAP that we talk about maybe a little bit further how people should go about who they should call if we could have even who they should call for potholes and is there and then how that list is constructed and then obviously if someone wants to come into Parks and Rec to look at the work list. And Dillon, you were mentioning earlier when we were speaking before the meeting, if someone's really having a big problem, they can come into about something, a street issue, they can come into Public Works.
Yeah, typically we're in transition. So I don't think we'd turn you away from Public Services if you came in with a complaint. We probably would refer you over there. I think we're trying to sort of push the work to where the workers are. But, yeah, we certainly would take those complaints. You can come in and complain. They do work at them. They do the best they can. Although the condition of our streets, I think, as Rob touched on, and talking about more about pavement management, there are streets that are in bad shape, so bear with them. They do
well,
the best they can.
Well, I think you're going to see more of it because of the way you're approaching it is to take care of the best streets first with And so the ones that are falling towards failure, you will see more potholes as you go till you work through it, so to speak. And so there is going to be a period of time you're probably going to be getting a bit of that. I don't fault how you're handling it. I'm only bringing up the fact that you're probably going to hear more about it.
And go ahead, Rob.
We could do a street repair 101 class. I could probably get some slides and do a PowerPoint on, you know, the how a pothole gets repaired, and then also the reporting requirements. So a little bit of a show on, you know, what you have to do to actually do that street repair, and what it takes physically to do, and then how you report that. And more explicit instructions on the use of our website to make that reporting.
I think that could be good, because I feel a lot of questions just in my day-to-day around Morro Bay, and just people talk about PWAB, and they just lambast the public works.
How can we force all the plumbers to
It's work within the city's right-of-way.
Pardon?
It is work within the city's right-of-way.
Yeah.
You need an encroachment permit to work within the city's right-of-way, and when you get that encroachment permit, you agree to perform that work to the engineering standards, and it is inspected by a public works inspector.
So this end, yeah, but what about the other end?
The other end is where the meter is located, that ball valve and fitting.
There are breaks that happen at the other end, too.
You're saying towards
the house? Where it connects to the house.
Towards the house?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So what's to stop from putting the same old puny connection there?
The Schedule 40?
Yeah.
They are allowed, per the plumbing code, to use Schedule 40 pipe.
And then they're going to wind up with a break again.
And
they're going to come to us wanting credit.
Well, do you make any sort of recommendations? I mean, the plumbing code is the plumbing code, and I think that's a beast no one wants to take on. But
Adopted standard of the city.
Yeah, and it is a standard. So, Bill, are you saying that you would like to see Public Works make a recommendation about that Schedule 40?
Well, that's what I hope. We'd send a recommendation to the city council to write an ordinance preventing a repeat of what's going on. So we correct it once and for all. Every time one breaks, we shouldn't have it breaking again.
Well, I believe the Water Billing Review Committee only allows basically a refund of once per incident.
Well,
and perhaps if the
every so many years, yeah. We allow them so many, you know. But it could break in 5 or 6 years, and they'd be free and clear for a credit again. We have no legal reason to say you can't do it, you know.
Well, how about this, Bill? How about if we, for a future agenda item, we bring this to Public Works, and we have a discussion, and then if we're all in agreement, we send a note or a letter to City Council.
That'd be great.
Okay. So how about if we do that? Because I mean, it's a great point, Bill. And how about if we put it on for a future agenda item?
Okay. Can I ask one thing? This is a building department issue. Does Public Works run the building department?
It's going to be
my first question.
I am also the building official.
Oh, okay. You're kind of on the hook there.
It's outside of the purview of the Public Works Advisory Board, the building code.
Right.
Yes, if you wish to bring that forward.
Sure. Good point. All right. So hopefully we'll have that on for August, Bill. Okay. Are there any other future agenda items?
No.
No? Okay, then. Then that concludes the June 16th episode of Public Works Advisory Board, and our next meeting is August 18th, Thursday, at 6 p.m. And so meeting is adjourned. Thank you.
Thank you.
Yeah, we're having our water bill review board next Wednesday.
Can you do that monthly?
And I'll bet. Yeah, every month.